Welcome back to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm your host, Lori Walsh, and Jonathan Ellis, co-founder of the independent newspaper, The Dakota Scout, is with us in SDPB's Kirby Family Studio today for our Dakota Political Junkies conversation, where we dive into what's new in state politics. Hey,
welcome. Thank you.
How you been?
I was in the weeds this week.
Were you?
Yeah.
You were editing a story moments before the microphones turned on.
Yeah, maybe we'll even talk about that.
It's never a dull moment at the Dakota Scout.
No. I mean, this is press day for us, so it's always kind of getting everything out to the printer.
So, all right. Yep. So let's start with one of the things that you've covered for a long time, long before you started the Dakota Scout. You were doing some really great reporting on marijuana in South Dakota, the conversation among voters, among lawmakers, and now we're seeing, I just always go, explain this to me, because I can drive up and down some Minnesota Avenue, and then somewhere south of town, there are storefronts that say this is a medical marijuana place.
Yep.
If I walked in them, would I, like, how is that rolling out right now?
If you have your card, yes.
Right? It says you need to have medical cards. Well, you know, so can you go in there and ask for a medical card?
No, you have to have you can go through, you know, your regular physicians, although they're very, not necessarily a lot of them are doing that. But they have these clinics, and there are some detractors on those that they think it's a pop-up clinic. Now, I will say,
one of them does look a little shady. I'm not going to lie. Like, it's not the shiniest facility.
Well, I will say, though, I'm not going to name any names
right,
here,
yeah.
but a person who I know who got a card a year ago had to renew it at the same type of facility, and they said, no, we're not going to renew it.
Really?
So, yeah. So that's very recent. I don't know if they're kind of clamping down a little bit on that. But, yeah, you get your card, and, I mean, if you wanted to go, it started with Flandreau,
sure.
You could get a tribal card through them and access their, I think they are several months, well, maybe even more than that, ahead of the state in terms of getting its medical marijuana program off the ground. Recall, this is all a result of a 2020 ballot initiative that voters passed regarding medical marijuana. And that same year, there was also the behemoth medical marijuana / hemp / recreational marijuana that also passed that eventually the Supreme Court struck down.
Okay, so that's where we are now. Not a stretch to say that voters are curious about this idea, right? They have passed things previously.
Correct.
And now there'll be new ballot measures that deal with recreational marijuana. What are you seeing about what that even looks? Because lawmakers don't seem to have any appetite.
No.
Like last time you were here, we talked about abortion and just the idea that lawmakers will most likely try to talk about it at this session before voters put something on the ballot that enshrines, you know, reproductive rights for women. Like that is a prediction. We don't know if that's true, but seems like a pretty smart.
It's trending in that direction when you look at statewide elections. Yeah.
Yeah. We don't see that with marijuana in the state. We don't see a ton of appetite from lawmakers. Or are you seeing that they're like, you know, we're gonna go ahead and pass a law in 2024?
There are some.
There are a few.
There are a few for sure.
Okay.
But you know, they're a minority within the Republican controlled legislature. Okay. But yeah, there are some who think, look, this is, you know, we should do this. And so let's get to the ballot measures. I mean, so you have two dueling ballot measures on recreational, potentially if they make the ballot, recreational. Cannabis again, and these are different because one of them, South Dakota's for Better Marijuana Laws, it's a pretty stripped down version of legalization, and it would basically ask the legislature then to establish a regulatory framework if voters were to pass it. It's a much, so I guess you'd say, laissez-faire approach to it.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have another proposal from Emmett Reistroffer, who has been a big advocate in this area across the nation for many years. He thinks that the regulatory structure should be sold, that if voters pass this, recreational marijuana should only be sold through existing medical marijuana because there's already a licensing structure for those facilities. Now, he has a kind of he's an owner, he's a chief operating officer of Genesis Farms, which has several licenses for medical marijuana. So obviously it would benefit them immensely to have an approach where only that subset of the industry was allowed to participate in the recreation part of it.
Right. So let's make no mistake, there's a lot of money to be made.
Yeah.
In this industry, potentially.
I mean, we've seen, and I don't have numbers. I mean, I'm from Colorado originally, right? And mm-hmm. so I kind of, it was interesting to see how it rolled out there. But I mean, the schools were swimming in money in Colorado from just, the amount of money that was, that went to like their capital funds and, building new buildings and things like that. So it's worked in some states for sure in terms of funding education. Legalization, and I've always been kind of on the libertarian side of that myself. There are costs and benefits with every regulatory structure, whether it's completely having it illegal or completely having it open. So, I mean, you got to take good with bad.
Yeah. Governor is definitely not pro-legalization of recreational marijuana. She's been pretty outspoken about that in the past.
Well, she was the one who ended up challenging the measure that got struck down.
All right. So we'll follow that in the future. But you also mentioned schools. And so let's talk about one of the stories that you're working on now. CJ Keene for SDPB did a story on this recently, and that is the school lunch debt conundrum.
Yeah.
South Dakota Public Broadcasting. This is a pandemic story. Yeah.
Yeah, you've done a good job of covering this issue as well. I mean, it came to light again now because of the policy that Sioux Falls is implementing. Now, some donors have wiped away couple hundred thousand dollars in student debt that in the meal program that was scheduled by the end of the year at this pace to be over $400,000. That's a pretty significant debt. And what they're proposing or what they're going to do now is if you have any debt, you can't get a breakfast. If you have $20 or more in debt, you would only be able to get a snack and a milk. And if you have $75 in debt, you don't get a meal.
You get a cold meal, right? You get the cheese sandwich.
My understanding is that that's the $20. The $75 is nothing. Now, I could stand to be corrected there, but that was my reading of that. So that's an interesting story. The question that we had at the Dakota Scout is this a statewide issue?
I'm going to read the quote from CJ's story because I have it up here, and this is Gay Anderson. If there are more than negative $20 in their account, we would be giving them a smart snack, but we would have to charge them a dollar for that. Once they hit the negative $75, our policy states that we are not to be feeding them, and that's not something that anybody wants to be doing.
Right.
So I think that speaks to you being correct there.
Ooh,
no cheese sandwich.
Journalists like to be correct. Good.
I have experience in the lunchroom, and that's the old way of doing it.
Yeah,
was
the old
didn't get the
sandwich.
Hot lunch, but they would give you a cheese sandwich, which was we called the cheese sandwich of shame, because then everybody would know. And that's what's at stake here, is kids not learning, kids being hungry, kids being embarrassed, equity, teachers spending all their money to feed their kids with goldfish and granola bars tucked in their drawer, and this idea that having school lunch debt is a moral failing.
Yeah, and I that's unfortunate. Look, we live in a society where there are people who have means and people who don't, and a lot of the kids that are in this situation would qualify for federal programs that exist for free and reduced lunches. So there's a lot of that we wiped away just to get those kids in those programs that, again, currently exist. Mm-hmm. I think we have to look at other ways, too, of how kids can participate, whether, it depends on their age and things like that, but, I mean, can they do some volunteer work? I mean, I think we got to look at this other ways, too, to try to...
You're going to cut the school grass to get your lunch? Are you going to do dishes?
Maybe. I mean, hey.
Send him in the back to do dishes.
One of my first jobs as a high school was a dishwasher. It was a good skill.
Yeah, we're talking about kindergartners.
No, I know. That's true. It's age-appropriate things. But there are. I think we got to look at this in a creative way. Now, we have, I will say, there are 9 states now. So this is all stemming from COVID relief funding. There were 2 years where the federal government paid for everybody's student, lunch, regardless of income. That ended. So there are 9 states that have gone ahead and implemented it, even at least temporarily, where they've kicked in the money to do this.
Because one of the things we learned is there was nationwide more than 80 million more meals were served when it was free. So there are a lot of kids going hungry that are not, they're not incurring the debt. They're hiding or they're sitting silently. They're not getting fed. And inflation is tough.
Yeah.
After the pandemic, a lot of people didn't know they had to reapply. Right. You know, they were getting a free lunch, but then there was a barrier to filling out the paperwork. Mm-hmm. They didn't understand it. It was complicated. Or their income became too high, but yet their real income didn't because the inflation on the food.
Because it hasn't adjusted for the inflation.
So all of a sudden they're out of the program. So there's a lot of factors here.
Right.
Are you seeing a push in South Dakota for universal free lunches?
Oh, sure. Representative Katie Wintman had a bill. I mean, it got shot down 14-1 in committee. And the issue is, though, you've got the price tag on that. That's about a $40 million a year to start, $40 million a year in revenue. And the interesting thing about that is where do you find that revenue? But then, you know, some of the same people who are pushing that also want to eliminate the sales tax on groceries. So there you're at $105 million or so there. Suddenly you've just, if you did both of those things, you're getting close to $150 million of revenue. Where does that come from? You know, what's that look like?
Yeah. Do you see a real conversation happening about this in Pierre?
I do.
This year?
I do.
You think so?
Yeah. There's a group of lawmakers, a bipartisan group that is going to try to address this. It may be to the point where there may be some it's not going to be all, you know, every $40 million program, maybe something else, but I think that there'll be conversations. Now, again, whether or not that moves the football down the field, I don't know, but there certainly will be conversations about it.
One of the challenges is, don't you think, this idea of, you know, we talk a lot about money on this show, federal money, state money. It can be hard to access it. You know, we just talked about, you know, free counseling for kids 4 to 17, and the walk-in clinics didn't draw a ton of people, and it's free for the next 3 years, therapy for your kid if they had any kind of trauma, divorce, you know, the death of a family member, a car accident, a dog bite, the pandemic, stress, or whatever. It's hard to get the word out about these things and to provide the access point. So a lot of people who are incurring debt could... There's a federal program already in place for them.
There is.
They have not figured out how to cross that bridge.
Yeah, and we'll have a story. I mean, you mentioned that there are some language barriers. That's probably a fairly significant issue in Sioux Falls and some of the other areas. But, you know, for example, we interviewed Superintendent Plant Geddes, and there's the whole pride issue too. I mean, people who don't want to be on a government program.
Right. Welcome to South Dakota. All right. Yeah. You can read more at DakotaScout.com.
TheDakotaScout.com.
TheDakotaScout.com. Jonathan Ellis, thanks so much. We appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.